When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
From Variety, celebrating more than 118 years covering the business of entertainment, this is the Award Circuit Podcast. Bradley Cooper says there was no grand plan to become a director in addition to acting.
I don't have a master plan other than to try to use as much, the best use of my time here as long as I'm here. That's the older I get, the more I realize that. And that means sort of being open and clear and comfortable with oneself.
I'm Michael Schneider, and on this episode of the award-winning Variety Award Circuit Podcast, we talk to director/writer/star Bradley Cooper and star Carey Mulligan about their film Maestro. It's a special bonus edition of the Variety Award Circuit Podcast. Stay close. Directed by, written by, and starring Bradley Cooper, Netflix's Maestro follows famed composer and musician Leonard Bernstein through decades of creating music and teaching against the backdrop of his marriage to his wife, Felicia Montalegre, played by Carey Mulligan. The film also stars Maya Hawke, Matt Bomer, and Sarah Silverman.
If summer doesn't sing in you, then nothing sings in you. And if nothing sings in you, then you can't make music. Something she told me.
Hello, I'm Lenny.
Hello, Felicia.
Oh, she's so beautiful. Oh. Tell me about her.
Oh, she's wonderful. She's a lovely girl.
What age are we living in? One can be as free as one likes without guilt or confession. Please, I know exactly who you are.
He can be the first great American conductor.
There's a price for being in my brother's orbit, you know that.
Variety's Clayton Davis spoke to Cooper and Mulligan to discuss the process of getting into the mindset to play the couple. The two break down key scenes and talk about their favorite acting works from one another. He began by asking Cooper about how and why he decided to tackle the story of Leonard Bernstein and Felicia Montalegre.
I definitely thought that there was a movie or a character that I thought that I could explore that's a conductor. Yeah, I definitely actually in some, I'd always thought there was like seven characters in me. I think I talked about it at some point, and that one of them was always a conductor. And we'd had to do private moments in grad school, and I would always wind up conducting in the private moment. Whenever we would have to sort of create characters and write monologues, they would always wind up being a conductor. And so I thought, wow, there's something deep inside if I was ever able to utilize that in some sort of narrative. And then Stephen was contemplating a biopic about Leonard Bernstein and knew that I had this obsession with conducting. And I think it's really, yeah, it is kind of incredible to be able to have that conversation with him. And it's only by the nature of the fact of our friendship and having almost done an American Sniper together. Yeah. So we had developed a friendship from that.
Oh, so I mean, that one of the most random facts you learn through a season is like Bradley Cooper conducts when he's just like chilling at home, and like he's been doing it his whole life. So you just, I mean, when it turns out to be Leonard Bernstein, are you just, is there like this overwhelming pressure of like, okay, now I have to like really bring it?
Actually learn how to conduct. Yeah.
Yeah. I have to kind of like
not
do
fake,
it. Yeah.
Fake conduct. Yes. You just nailed it. Yeah. Yeah, I was fake conducting for years. And I just barely got by to actually conduct just 6 minutes of music and a chorus of Make Our Garden Grow, a choral rehearsal. But outside of that, that was it. But yeah, but it was wonderful to actually learn about this thing that I just had a fascination with, but actually learn about the world, what it is to be a conductor. And in Bernstein's case, much more than just that, a composer, you know, whenever he would ask what his title is, you know, for his passport, he would always say musician.
Mm. And then, Carrie, then you're walking down the street and Bradley Cooper says, hey, come be in this movie I'm going to do. Did you feel any pressure there or just...
No. I felt very casual about it. Yeah. Of course. Firstly, because I'd always wanted to, we'd known each other for a long time through just bumping into each other at things. And I'd always wanted to act with him. You know, I'd always wanted to. And I thought, because we somehow had sort of met each other backstage a bit more, I thought it would be in theatre. But I wanted to act with him. And I was really glad that I didn't find out that he came to the first preview of the play that I was doing. I was doing a one-woman show in the West Village called Girls and Boys. And he came. I knew he was going to come because he was in New York and someone had given me the heads up that he was coming. But I didn't know when. And he came, of course, to the first preview, which is exactly when you want an actor that you really admire to see your work on the first run.
When all the mistakes have been worked out.
Yeah. So he came to that. And then there was a whole disaster with the curtain coming down on my head and he took me to hospital and all, you know, so we had kind of quite dramatic thing. But then it was a couple of days after that we met and in Cafe Cluny and he showed me Make Our Garden Grow on his iPhone and pitched the opening of the movie on the waterfront and, you know, just said, I want to make a film about marriage. And it was just, yeah.
Did you set that up for the curtain to fall on her head just to like?
Could you imagine?
That was a big,
that'd
the big
be pretty
scheme.
Dark.
Yeah, I mean, see how she handles pressure.
Know. That's right? Risking her health. That's pretty.
And you weren't hurt or anything by that curtain.
I was quite hurt.
No, that was very.
I had a concussion.
Yeah. Curtains are heavy.
They are. Yeah.
You say curtain, but it wasn't a curtain.
It's like a scrim, so it's like
it was made out of wood.
It's wood. Yeah.
It was not a curtain.
No. I was concussed for about 6 months.
It was like for real.
Yeah. Yeah. And the doctor, when I went to the so I went to the
I know, every time you say curtain, I was like,
it sounds fluffy. It's not fluffy.
No, yeah.
But I went,
it's the opposite of a curtain.
It really hurt.
It's an effing wall that came down on your head.
Yeah, walking down on your head.
Fell on your head.
Yeah. I mean, it was a massive plus for the nurses at the hospital because they were thrilled that Bradley Cooper had come to visit. But it was generally quite bad. And I remember the doctor saying, like, the main thing is do not look at bright lights and don't just try not to use your brain. And I was doing a 90-minute monologue. Mm. And I was like, well,
I still don't understand how that happened halfway through the performance.
Oh, my God.
Halfway. Yeah. Yeah, I don't understand how she kept going.
And I'm over there at that time. What was I doing around? Like
I was in the village doing this little thing. But yeah, so then
you were there then. You're saying?
I was on the East Coast. Yeah, really? Yeah. I lived in New York, Jersey.
Well, it was
City.
A very short run. It was
and
like
you didn't
six
really
weeks.
Promote it much, right?
Yeah. No, we did it in London, but it was a tiny. It was like a mini run. So it wasn't. We weren't even there for long enough to. But anyway, so that was
I
our
got
kind of
next movie idea. We're going to see the adaptation of that.
Girls
it would be wonderful.
Pretty
actually.
Dark. Yeah, it is.
Be interesting movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. But yeah, and then we had our little meeting, and then I saw A Star Is Born, and I was like, "What? Are we allowed to swear?
Yeah. Curse, please.
Fuck. Like this is insane." And I saw it with Zoe Kazan because she's one of my best friends, and she's got such great taste. And I was like, "Come with me. I really want to." And she was like, this director is, you know, and I was like, I know. And it's also, we get to act in it. You know, it was like this ridiculous. And then the notion of just playing this, the more I learn about her, the more excited I was because, you know, she's such an extraordinary person.
Thank you for giving me a great segue into my next point. I have to publicly apologize to Bradley Cooper because when I heard you were going to direct A Star Is Born, my instant reaction was to get annoyed and be like, God, and you think you can direct now? Let's because a lot of people try to do it, and there's very finite numbers of Clint Eastwoods in the world, Kevin Costners that can do it, and it feel like natural. And I saw A Star Is Born, and I was like, oh, I was really wrong about this. So I need to publicly say that you can direct the shit out of a movie. And then here comes Maestro, and then dare I say better than A Star Is Born, because then I was like, oh, he's not just playing anymore. Mm. He's like a filmmaker. He's an auteur. He has something to say. So was it always in your grandmaster plan to be a director? Was that embedded in
First
you?
Of all, I really appreciate that. That's nice. Thank you, man.
It's a little mean, too. I'm like, yeah, I didn't believe in you, but now I do.
No, but it's nice to say that. Yeah. Thanks for saying that. I don't have a master plan other than to try to take to use as much the best use of my time here as long as I'm here. That's the older I get, the more I realize that, and that means sort of being open and clear and comfortable with oneself. And then when that happens, then all of a sudden things that you maybe dream about or even bigger than what you think you could dream about can occur. Mm-hmm. I think that's sort of the thing I've learned as I've gotten older. Yeah. And so I've always loved film, absolutely loved film since I was a kid. I don't think I gave myself permission to dream as big as to actually write and direct movies.
Yeah.
But then as I've gotten older, but even the progression from A Star Is Born to this movie, I feel like has been a crazy evolution that I could even feel internally. And even the way that I even made the movie was so different because of that.
Do you think that you are all those things, actor, producer, director, writer forever? Or do you find yourself leaning or feeling drawn to one thing more so than others?
No, I don't even see it as separate things. I think it is all one thing. And I think it's always been that way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I've had such wonderful collaborations with filmmakers when I was just the actor, or at least started out to be just the actor in a movie and then became executive producer or producer as the project evolved. Yeah. Because I think those people saw that likeness in me. And all we ever want is help.
Yeah.
And it's a collaborative art form. So I think that for sure that was always inside me. Even on Alias, this television show, more than 20 years ago, I would always sit in all the editing rooms when I wasn't working and get all of the VHS dailies I'd bring home in my backpack and watch and just study. And Ken Olin was incredibly open with me back then. Do you know who Ken Olin is? Yeah, he's a great director and also an actor from, what was it, 30-something? Or what was it called?
I was going to say 20-something.
I think it was 30-something, And he was one of the first people to really open up his process and allow me to just soak it all in.
Yeah, awesome. Hopefully that bug is in you, Carey Mulligan. I think you could do anything. So if you feel like directing and writing, feel free to jump in and
I still, when they say, all right, just stand camera left, I look at the camera operator sort of slightly nervously and he'll like nod to where okay. Yeah. So I think I'm a bit a ways off.
Let's talk about getting into these roles. It's a very complicated man that you're portraying and a complicated woman you're portraying because their marriage was to the, I'm going to say normal, quote unquote, world was unconventional. She accepted him for him. And the movie doesn't outwardly or directly address or say out loud, I guess, what people look for. Was it really just a marriage? Was Lenny bisexual? What were those conversations like between you two and getting in those characters about what you know about him versus what you know about yourself?
That's interesting. I don't remember us having any sort of macro identifying label conversations on either one of them. It was really more about asking Carey to go on this journey and then sending her scenes and the script as it was evolving. Mm-hmm. And it really was just about the story. Those are the conversations, the story, and the evolution of this marriage and this relationship. I don't think we ever talked about it in terms of categorizing it.
I agree. And just on that, I have such an amazing, I'd get like a text from Bradley and it would be a scene that he'd just written. And I would open it up and be like, and this is like 3 years before, you know, and it would just, I'd get these pages, I just wrote this and it would be like, you know, I'd get it in England and it would be, he'd have written it in the morning in New York. And so it was just the coolest thing just to,
and she's so smart, as you know, and creative. And it was wonderful to have that access to an incredibly gifted mind and also the person who's going to wind up inhabiting the role. So it was a wonderful journey to be able to write in real time with the person who's actually going to wind up saying the lines.
Yeah. So you have fragments of the script pretty much in text message form.
Oh my gosh. We had the fight scene.
If you look at my text message, the info thing, where with Bradley, it's like, a million different versions of him with Kazu as Lenny from like 2019 onwards, all these different ages and stages and versions and things. And then, yeah, loads and loads. Well, lots of, I mean, so many pictures and references and things, but pages and pages and pages and pages of script. And that was what was the cool, it was like getting a little present.
Yeah.
You know? So when you get a great script from a director, you know, if you, I think that's probably why I'm not sort of a great producer or anything like that, or haven't got the bones for it, because my favorite thing is opening up a script and it being like a surprise. Yeah. And then you go, oh, this is like, so, and that was, I got that like all the time yeah. with, because he kept on sending me like little bits. So it was, yeah, my phone is full of them.
Well done. I love how the two of you, now I can associate you with just one word for people who have seen my show, and they'll know exactly what I'm talking about for the rest of time. So, Carrie, for you, it's Snoopy.
Yes.
And then for you, Bradley, it's Church. Like, they will just be synonymous with your name. Also, shout out to Emma Stone. Coopsie Poopsie is going to go around for probably some time. So
that was during an interview we did.
Yeah, I heard.
That terrible Emma Stone. But can you talk about those big moments for you guys in the film? Because I believe that's like your gifts to cinema kind of scene. Like, I have a term, the scene that proves it. Like, why are you guys in the conversation? Why do we want to give these things awards? Watch those scenes. Even out of context, it's just they're fire. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Matt, do you want to talk about writing Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
Snoopy?
Sure.
Snoopy?
Sure.
Ooh, Thanksgiving. Don't call it Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I mean, it is Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Yeah. Part of the humor of it.
Yeah.
That fight takes place at Thanksgiving. Yeah. I'm glad you brought up those two scenes, because those two scenes are the two pillars of the film story-wise. Because the movie is about their relationship and the evolution of their relationship. And that first scene is the reckoning, the seeming reckoning, even though she doesn't really come to terms with what she's actually feeling. But she does confront him in a serious way. Mm. And then the other scene is the truth of his existence and her seeing that, and then the reconciliation. And almost the moment where maybe they actually do fall in love for the first time, maybe. Yeah. Certainly maybe him.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because he certainly realizes what it's like without her that year, you know. And before, he had just met her when he was still, you know, in the throes of his talent being expressed and then received back to him from the world when he was young at 25. But now he's, you know, in his mid-50s, and he's just spent time away from her and miserable. So I'm glad you brought – without those two scenes working, there is no movie. Mm. The fight scene, you know, as a writer, as we were talking about calm and being open, writing is definitely the hardest part of this whole process, no question. It's also the most thrilling, because the landscape is endless, right? And you have like an unlimited budget in your brain. It just, otherwise, why, you know, that's the only time you can, right? And, for some reason, that scene I wrote faster than anything in the whole movie. And I think I wrote it about 20 minutes one night back 5 years ago. And I don't know if I told you this, but I would have, you know, married couples who I knew who were older, who were sort of in an interesting dynamic. I would have read that scene throughout the years.
Yeah. Really?
Yes.
Oh
my God. I would like be with them. I was like, would you guys mind? And I would pull it up on my phone and I would have them read it.
No.
Yeah. It was really incredible.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you say to them why? You were just like, oh, just read
this
one.
They knew I was working on this movie.
But I mean, like, did you say, like, you guys are having a rough time?
No, no, but afterwards, like, each time, one of the people in the relationship would say, it's very honest. It's very true.
Wow. Well, it is.
That whole thing.
The remarkable thing.
And so it was just kind of wonderful. And I really knew that there was so much truth in it. It felt like one of those miraculous things. Mm. And I was able to send that to Carrie, probably maybe the first or second thing you ever read.
Yeah.
And so we got to work on that scene forever.
Yeah.
And then just, again, she's an incredible musician. Actor, you know, with her voice and her melody, and the whole movie is sort of put together melodically. The lion's share of it, their conversation. Most of the music is actually the melody of their dynamic, verbally, and that scene is probably the epicenter of it, especially for her. I mean, he's just sitting there hitting, like, you know, sort of accent notes, which I was very conscious of on the day to make the music.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I added that third take was different.
Oh, it was totally.
Do you know what I mean? Because I was like, I had sort of heard the beat, you know, where I could come in on the downbeats.
Yeah. Which is, and it was also, it was like, we did two takes at first that just, they just, we just didn't feel truthful, and we knew it, and we both knew it straight away, and it was like, okay.
Well, I would just say it was truthful.
But it was a, it was,
but it was coming at it from a completely different place.
Yeah, it was coming from a different place. Yeah.
That didn't function where it needed to be in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there was no crescendo, right?
And because of that, it didn't fit the arc, but it was, you know, I never didn't believe
no,
you.
No. Yeah. But yeah, it was that third take, which is the one that's in the movie, that just everything about, well, this was what was the most remarkable thing about working with Bradley as an actor and a director, is that, you know, of course, there were times when he would say things very specifically to me, always as Lenny, but like that would feel more like, or, you know, he would physically move me somewhere, you know, all of those things that you are kind of more standard directing things. But there was very little of that. What it was more was, because all of our stuff was together, he would direct me by his own work. So he knew that whatever he did would elicit a certain response in me. And in that third take, everything he did was so intentional and it pissed me off. Something rotten. I mean, really, like everything he did. Yeah. I was, you know, and it was like he bumped into the furniture, and that was fucking annoying because he's hungover and, you know, he was drinking a carton of milk and that drove me crazy. And then, of course, he goes for another drink.
And he has sunglasses on.
It is a sunglasses on. And like he's going to get another drink. Do you really need another drink? You've just shown up 3 hours late. Like everything was there to just push me and push me and push me and push me. So it was. And then that third take, it just felt like...
That was it.
That was it. It was like, it felt like, you know, flying, and suddenly we were like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then that was, we wrapped for the day, basically.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was it.
You're really good at this acting thing, Carey Mulligan.
Isn't she?
You're really good at it. You should probably do it as a career. It's really awesome.
I'm going to try.
I loved it so much. And then Church. Let's talk about Church.
Church.
One take Church.
One take. Yeah. This was one of those movies where once we have it, had it, and I learned that really from Clint more than anybody I work with. When you know you've had it, just move on. There's no reason to do anything else. It's sort of a thing that everybody feels, and I really do believe that because I think it affects the not only the rest of your shooting day, but the rest of the movie itself, the actors, the characters, everything. I think you can over explore something sometimes. Mm. I do. And even rhythmically. Yeah, I mean, but when you don't have it, you have to keep going.
Yeah.
And you just have to keep digging and digging and digging and digging. And this church scene, this cathedral, the Ely Cathedral, was an example of that. The first day of shooting, we had allocated a day and a half, a night and a half. I just was, I was not, because I knew I wanted to actually conduct the attempt to conduct the London Symphony Orchestra in Mahler's Resurrection. I kept messing it up, Clayton. I was behind the tempo, wasn't doing the changes, wasn't keying the orchestra members when they were supposed to, and it was it just wasn't working. And then the second day, I realized that I had set up cameras in a fearful way, in a way to protect that. And I think because I was entering into an experience already setting myself fearing failure, I failed. It was really interesting. But once I was bold. As Anthony Hopkins says, you know, or requotes, you know, be bold and mighty forces will come to your aid. Once I set up a shot, which is the shot in the film, which leaves no room for error, all of a sudden it happened. And I was able to conduct them for those 6.5 minutes.
I imagine, like, we talked a little bit about this. I moderated a conversation with you yesterday, and hearing you now even talk about it again, it seems like one of those experiences that maybe you don't even remember in the moment. Like sometimes, because I think you said yesterday, it was like Lenny was here. Like Lenny was a part of me. You almost feel strange that you never met him
because
you do know him.
Yeah.
So was that
that happened the whole film.
Okay. Yeah.
It really did. Yeah. But in that moment, oddly enough, I remember every single moment. But my memory is like I'm levitating over the on an angle over the orchestra. That's my memory, as I don't remember having my feet actually on the podium. Really? But I felt very so inside the music that it felt like there was no time. It wasn't going by fast. I was inside the music is what it felt like.
Wow.
And also, by the way, aware of the camera, because we created it all to be, again, it was all synchronized the way most of the movie is shot. So as opposed to the way I had shot the day before with two cameras up here and the cable cam. So I wasn't even in sync with the movie. But this was, the camera started here on a 27 millimeter lens. I was here. It comes through here as we come. And then it goes back. It goes out through him. And then it goes out. And then it ends over her right shoulder. And there was sort of this awareness of the music and everybody and how the movie was playing out. Yeah. And I think that's what allowed me to give over to it, because it's when all of those things are synchronized. That's when it feels like filmmaking, for me at least, is at its highest.
Yeah. Carrie, when you're standing there on the side and you're watching him conduct, what's going through your mind at that moment? Or are you just like, please, I can't mess this up, because that would be terrible.
I was very nervous about my shoulder. Yeah.
Like, if I just move my shoulder just an inch, it's over.
Yeah.
Or just go down and check your phone.
Yeah, exactly.
Where's your shoulder?
No, it was really, I don't think you could, I think you get it. Amazingly, when you watch the movie, you get the sense of it. But just being in that, being in front of it, you know, witnessing that in life was just, I mean, it was just so beautiful.
Yeah.
It's funny because I, you know, I know that on the first day, he wasn't conducting them. And that's why, you know, we came back. And thank goodness we did, to get this single take, which is so extraordinary. But, you know, I think 99% of other people would have been like, it's good enough. You know, like to a layman, it 100% looked incredible. But he wasn't actually conducting them. They were, you know, he was, but like it wasn't right. And I didn't know that, but he knew it and they knew it. And people who watch who know stuff would have known it, maybe. But there would have been a way to get around that.
That's right.
So easily. Like, done.
But it would have meant editing.
But it would have been. So for me, the whole day, I was thinking, this looks great. Like, I thought it was incredible. And there's this beautiful gesture that he does that you see in this take. You don't see her, but you see him see her. And he, like, reaches into his heart and, like, he's, like, the delight and the joy in his whole body there. that she's there. And it's so beautiful when you watch the film for, you know, second time and you see that and you realize, oh, that's because she's there. And he's just noticed it. It's so heartbreaking. But yeah, I was just, I mean, it was just incredible. I felt like I'd won a competition. It was so incredible to watch.
Oh, well, you're also good at this acting thing, Bradley Cooper. Feel free to do it all your life and make movies.
Yeah.
I have to, actually, I gave Bradley an apology and I have to apologize to you for something, also to Carey Mulligan.
Okay.
I've loved you so long, you know, in Education, Inside Llewyn Davis, Shame, I'll shame the world forever that Shame does not have an Oscar nomination to it.
Mm.
But we live in a very complicated time, and I write a lot about diversity in film. I'm half Puerto Rican, half black. And on its face, initially, hearing you were playing Felicia, it's easy to be like upset, like, oh, it's a Latino role.
Mm.
But thanks to Bradley for taking the time to put it in the script and understanding how things are complicated within our cultures, Felicia, born in Costa Rica, isn't the Latino that we're talking about when I'm talking about diversity. So it may feel like initial gut go-to response, but it's not. And you address it in the movie, Bradley, so I have to thank you for doing that, because it's so complicated in a lot of ways, and you can't just learn about someone when you see where they were born.
Mm.
So I just to give you a little bit of credit in that department.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I mean, I think in terms of absolutely everything to do with this film, like the thought that went into every element of it was just so unbelievable. So, yeah.
It's very thoughtful.
Thank you.
Okay, now I want to talk fun now. Maya Hawke, a little troublemaker, told a great story about a dog yesterday. I saw the thread of where she was going, but people weren't there for it. But she was telling the story about this untrained dog that Bradley vehemently believes was a trained dog, a professional dog on set. But how we often feel untrained and how we feel like we're not worthy or not good enough for this, whatever you're doing in any given job. Can you recall a time that you guys felt like that in this job that you have, that you love so much, that you're really good at, but does that still stay with you about just feeling like, am I good enough to be doing this? Can I play Leonard Bernstein, I believe Felicia, or anyone, does that stay with you ever?
I remember seeing Al Pacino do a reading of Salome at the Actors Studio when I was in grad school. and his willingness to, he was, it was just a read. And I remember Chris Messina was there then, who hadn't, yeah. I don't think he was like, he was still a student. And this is many, many years ago. And I remember going like, wow, this guy next to Al Pacino is so good. And it was like, I don't know, he's probably like in his 20s. I don't even know. And, but seeing Al Pacino, who I'd only seen in, you know, Dog Day Afternoon and The Godfather and Serpico and, you know, and Heat and in the line, you know, I mean, it was just like, and I'm watching this guy really risk falling on his face, trying stuff. And I was really reminded of, well, you just started zero no matter what, every time. You're started zero. And then doing Wedding Crashers, watching Vince Vaughn risk every take, just doing the most outlandish, different takes on a scene. And some of them not working, but then crushing it.
Also an Oscar nomination ode to Vince Vaughn. Yeah.
That is, I mean, really, those two are very cemented in my mind no matter what you've done or accomplished, the beautiful thing about art is you start at zero every time, and there's no guarantee of anything, and so you just have to put the work in every single time. So it's like the answer to that question is like, yeah, every single journey starts at that place. Yeah. There is no built-in assurance. That's the beauty about art, is it takes a tremendous amount of work and effort just to be able to get to a place of hopefully exploring it in a truthful way.
Yeah, and I would say I think part of why we have kind of a kinship, I guess, in the way that we approach work, I think, is that neither of us are like enormously drawn to things that aren't something that probably scares the shit out of you. Like if it seems like it's something you're like, oh, you know, then it's like not really the thing, right? Mm. Like that, not that you're looking to be afraid, but that you're looking to explore something you haven't understood before, like express something you haven't understood before. And that generally tends to be things that do make you nervous, you know, give you cause
to be.
I
think different things have at least made me nervous over the years. I remember Willem Dafoe coming to our school and saying that he only takes roles that terrify him. And I remember as a student sitting in the audience thinking, well, I'll never do that. Literally. Yeah. I thought, I'll take only something that if I could even take anything, I don't even know what that means, but I'll audition for something that I feel like I can do.
Yeah.
And so it's like the first part of my sort of journey in this field was just trying to be myself in front of the camera, that I could even just be present. Mm. And then as that starts to become something that's easier, then you go, oh, I can actually be another person.
Yeah.
And so the evolution of that, where that fear has taken me, is exciting.
Awesome. My last question, it's a two-parter, though. Bradley, there's something in the water that seems different about you, and the people always think that we know people, like if we see them in Hollywood, but I see such like a brightness about you this time that I haven't seen of you before. And it seems like, so like, I feel like you kind of get to this place of like, I like love life kind of thing, or maybe you always did, but it really, it's like protruding out of you nowadays. And then with you, Carrie, you've had some – I mean, you've been scraping the barrel on leading men, Oscar Isaac, Peter Sarsgaard, now Bradley Cooper, you know, we'll talk to your agent about getting some better not acting bad. Spars. But you have just been churning them out. I love that you were watching with Zoe Kazan, because then you guys got to do She Said together, which is incredible. But you're both at this moment where – I won't say you're not peaking, because I think there's still more to come, but there is a very joyful moment about this moment for you guys. Can you talk about that in addition to saying your favorite role about from the other person in any other movie that obviously is not Maestro?
Well, thanks for acknowledging that. Mm. I think you're right. Maybe I don't take things as seriously. Mm. Maybe that's something. Mm. Being a father, huge.
Yeah, kids do that to you.
Yeah. And thank gosh, because getting old kind of sucks. So the fact that, like, you know, spiritually and mentally you evolve is a little blessing.
Yeah.
What are my favorite performances?
Oh, God, don't. No, I'm nervous. I've got two in my head, but I, like, one of them just feels, like, very obvious, which is obviously A Star Is Born. Mm. But, like, I'll never get over that.
I mean, Drive, man.
Really?
I don't know, man. Drive always really got me.
I love Drive.
Yeah. I don't know.
I love that movie.
You but and mine, Drive. Between... Well, we talked about that a couple of weeks ago. I mean, yeah. There's so many. I know there's the obvious ones.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason.
I'm between American Sniper and A Star is Born.
Those are my two for
American
him.
Sniper but really
Maestro, yeah.
hit me hard. My brother was in the military, and there was just something about that film that just absolutely. I mean, everything about that film, but your performance in that.
Carrie and I always in sync. Thank you, Carrie.
There you go.
And then Drive. I love Drive.
You like the jacket's cool.
You and Drive. By the way, I love Drive.
I'm trying to sell
Oscar
it to
Isaac twice.
Isaac.
But shame, yeah, man. Shame.
Shame.
Yeah, man. You're right. It's insane. Yeah. No, I think you're right. Can I switch?
Yeah. Go ahead.
That's the last time I had my hair.
I'm going to say shame. No question.
Oh yeah.
No question. Shame.
That's star, director, writer Bradley Cooper and star Carey Mulligan of Maestro, now streaming on Netflix and also in select theaters. And that's it for this edition of Variety's Award Circuit Podcast. Zach Levin edited this episode and Michael Schneider is the producer. Be sure to subscribe to the Award Circuit Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download podcasts. Also, head on over to Variety.com and click on the Award Circuit tab to find the latest awards predictions and key races, as well as your daily fix of news, analysis, and reviews. For Jazz Tanke, Janelle Riley, and Clayton Davis, I'm Michael Schneider, and we'll see you on the circuit.